Live Line on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry, bringing you great savings on curtains and bedding. Available all year in store and online at harrycurry.com.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Live Line. 51551 is our text number. At the end of yesterday's programme, I encouraged people, as best you can, if you have the facilities and indeed the time, to download the O'Toole report. There's 5 volumes. It comes to nearly 1,000 pages. But if you download it as a PDF, you'll get it on the government website. If you download it as a PDF, that will allow you to search very quickly. That's what I've been doing the night before last. I did Ballyfermot and De La Salle and Ballyfermot, and of course that came up with the highest number of abusers alleged and abused alleged in any De La Salle school on the island, believe it or not. And then I mentioned in the promo an hour ago that I've been looking at the Order of St. John of God's, and they're listed in the document. And people go and have a look at that yourself, because when I mentioned that one institution jumps out in terms of numbers, we got a phone call from the legal advisors to St. John of God's, apparently, or the legal reps, and RT have agreed that we're not to mention that institution again, because one person, even though it says the number of alleged abusers 29, one person is beside the court, and he's obviously innocent until proven guilty. Okay, John Murphy, innocent until proven otherwise. John Murphy. John, good afternoon. Then Philip is there, and then Damien O'Farrell is there. Okay, Philip, your situation is with Christian Brothers.
Yes, Joe, yeah.
And tell us.
Well, in national school, in primary and post-primary, in primary, it was more, I don't know what the term would be, sexual abuse or sexual assault, mm-hmm. where Christian Brother walked along the line of the desks and basically broke the children's groins and squeezed them. And I remember a child in front of me actually vomited after on the trauma of it. And the Christian Brother called him up and led them first. Well, we were so young, we didn't know. We hadn't got words for it.
And
that was regular.
And the Christian Brothers do feature an awful lot in this report. Yeah. But I mentioned yesterday as well that the Ryan report, and I've been going through the Ryan report, which you can also download. And I mentioned Lota School for Children with Intellectual Difficulties. And that's what I've been looking at in the last 24 hours. Schools for Children with Intellectual Disabilities. And Lota were excoriated in the Ryan report, which is nearly 15 years ago. But the Brothers of Charity told the Ryan report that there were a few, they believed there was a few isolated allegations of sexual abuse, and that there was no widespread abuse. I'm quoting from the Ryan report. Whereas the O'Toole report tells us 2 days ago that the same organisation and the same location and the same time period are now admitting that they've had 166 allegations of sexual abuse from 50 different abusers. 50 different abusers. And no doubt. Anyway, let me go to John Murphy. John is in Tipperary. John.
How are you, Joe?
Back to Henry Maloney, Holy Ghost.
Yeah, that's right. I was a victim of his. And I have been through the whole process of taking a civil action against the Spiritans, and I got compensation. But as everybody else says, that's not really the point. Mm-hmm. The point is the feeling that you get of release. You know, I don't know how to explain it in words, but when I talk to other victims, they say the same thing. But what I really, really want to see is I want to see the people whom facilitated it all being named, and once and for all. So saying this guy did this, mm-hmm. this guy moved this guy, and that's what I would really like to see done. And I would also love to see, just try and convince people to have the courage to do something about it if they have been abused, and go and see the guards, or 1 in 4, or somebody like that. Because there's so many more I know in my class.
And the Garda Commissioner, Drew Harris, actually said today, encourage people to come forward. But one of the problems is, John, we've now been told that we cannot name one particular institution for legal reasons. But I'm convinced if that institution was named, as Willow Park was named, as Black Rock was named in the public domain, other people would come forward. But anyway, that's as it is for the time being. Hopefully that position changes in the next 24 hours. But I'll come back to you in a sec, John. I just want to stick to Damien O'Farrell. Damien, good afternoon.
Hello, Joe.
Yeah, how are you? You were abused by the Christian Brothers. But Damien, can you begin with this whole thing that the religious orders will run to their legal advisors and try and hide and try and stifle debate? What happened in your case?
Well, I suppose I come from a place of advocating for pupils in day schools, you know, and I one of the things I highlighted, the litigation strategy of the Christian Brothers. I have lived experience, and I now work, I suppose you mentioned the Ryan report there, and I now work for Sage Advocacy, and they support survivors of institutional abuse, people who have gone to industrial schools, reformation, reformatories, Magdalen laundries, mother and babies, and they're having the same obstacles today as the day pupils are having with the scoping inquiry. The same obstacles, the same organisations, the same legal issues. So I went through a civil case myself. It started in 1998. The guy was convicted. The Christian Brother was convicted in 98. He was convicted again, John Merrick. He was convicted again a couple of months ago. He's in jail at the moment. He was convicted in 98, and I went through a civil case there, and that civil case was settled with the Christian Brothers in 2008.
Wow.
And then there was a Supreme Court case in 2017, and it found that religious organisations, including the Christian Brothers, they're unincorporated bodies. So they can't be sued. Their members can be sued. They can't be sued individually. They don't put forward somebody to take the case. So from 2017 to now, anyone who's suing the Christian Brothers is suing all their members. So that can be one guy from my school, that's St. Fintan's out in Sutton. One guy was 163 different Christian Brothers he was dealing with. So he had to serve summonses against those Christian Brothers. Some of those Christian Brothers were living in France. Some of them were living in the Far East. Some of them were living in the UK. That's different jurisdictions that he had to go to the High Court. The Christian Brothers wouldn't give the names and addresses of the brothers. He had to go to the High Court to get the names and addresses. Then he had to go to the High Court again to get permission to serve summonses abroad. So this is just going on for years and years and years. And this is what the type of, and as I said, the people in the institutions, people in the industrial schools, the reformatories, they've been dealing with the same way. It's been going on for much too long. And I'm hoping this minister, Minister Foley, I saw her passion the other day, and I believe that it has to give us some hope and some optimism, you know. But there'll be probably an election soon, and there could be a different minister there, so I don't know what's going to happen. There's been hope before.
Well, I can tell you, Damien, I was talking to David Ryan last night for a long time, and he's along with his late brother Mark, they were the first to blow the whistle and reveal what was going on in Black Rock and open up this incredible can of worms. And he was highly, highly impressed, in fairness, by the Minister for Education, Norma Foley, and her public attitude and indeed her private response to him, which I won't talk about. But he was very impressed. But Damien, the thing that I am trying to get here is, in the Ryan report, going back now nearly 15 years, there is a section on a particular school which features in the scope. The O'Toole, and that is Lota in Glanmire in Cork, run by the Brothers of Charity. And the Ryan report, it's a shocking, and there are some shocking chapters, but it makes the point that this is a school in Lota, in Glanmire, for children with intellectual disabilities. In other words, Dermot Martin said it, the former Archbishop of Dublin said it to Clare this morning, abuse of children, of course, is absolutely vile. But then to actually pick on children who are intellectually challenged would not probably not be believed, might not be able to articulate it. But my point is, the Ryan report said quite clearly that this school, which was dealing with children who have intellectual challenges, the abuse was rampant, even though the brothers ignored it, and they're obviously anonymous, but anonymized, but they listed different names in the report. Now, this did not alert anybody until BlackRock Boys. This did not alert anybody to say, can we look at other schools in the country that were residential and dealing with boys who were intellectually handicapped? And I found this letter, and again, I'm not allowed to name this particular institution, but this is how they described themselves in the letters to the paper looking for money. This is a school for an institution for mentally retarded boys, many of whom are orphans. I appeal to your readers, please, to donate much-needed gifts or subscriptions for the sale. All saleable articles such as bottled goods, cakes, and this is for the sale of work, and home produce, groceries, toys, fancy goods, will be very gratefully received. Okay, second letter to the newspapers looking for money for this special school, which features now in the Scoping Inquiry. This school, we do great work in caring for and educating some 250 mildly mentally handicapped boys. The boys are cared for, educated and trained so that they grow up to lead happy and independent lives. Now, why did it take the Scope report, the O'Toole Scoping Inquiry, to remind us that children who were in... Not all of them, by the way, but there's some of them that just jump out in terms of numbers in this report. Children with intellectual disabilities are especially vulnerable, and there should have been an inquiry initiated even to that area 10 years ago when the findings on the LOTA school for intellectual children with intellectual boys, by the way, primarily were highlighted. But that didn't happen. It will happen now, we presume. But I also point out the Brothers of Charity gave one story to the Ryan report, and now they're giving a completely different story in terms of the number of allegations. Okay, Philip, back to you, Philip. Philip, yeah. did were the police involved? Did you complain? Where did all this end about this abuse that was perpetrated on you?
Well, unfortunately, I was diagnosed with bipolar. So, and I actually broke down crying after seeing Mary Rafferty's report on RT, I think it was 93. And my wife saw me go to the doctor, so and psychiatrist. He preferred me to psychiatrist, and I went to St. Patrick's Hospital several times. And I had depressed what happened, particularly in the first year in the secondary school when I was actually raped. And I always, in my mind, it was always somebody else that I was seen. And it took years and years and years of being in hospital. And eventually, a brilliant psychologist that was on my team in the hospital caught on to something I said. And after the, it was a group, very serious program that I was in the hospital.
And you were abused in the CBS and Donora Avenue, let's say it before I'm told not to say it, and the CBS Kalasha Kivin, which is in Crumlin, isn't that correct?
Yeah.
So you were abused at primary and second level. You were traumatised by all this, your suicidal thoughts. Your wife, in fairness, encouraged you to contact AWARE. When you hear over the last few days, Philip, when you hear all this being... in many cases revealed, we had Jerry Pierce yesterday on revealing for the first time, a 70-year-old man, that he was abused by one of the Holy Ghost priests who was hidden and protected and moved by the spirit and the Holy Ghost, as they were then. What is your reaction when you hear all this stuff?
To be honest, Joe, I'm more obsessed by what happened to other children than me.
Okay.
I'm seriously very upset about when I see reports like what's going on tomorrow, particularly the specialist notes, my God, I think it's just the tip of the iceberg. And by your program and getting people on, telling their story, hopefully people listening will say, yes, I went through that. You know, I hid it for years. It was a psychological thing. It was suppressed. Yeah. It was always other children, not me. Yeah. But the brilliant psychologist out in St. Pat's caught on to something. I just said a remark. Mm-hmm. And she drew it out of me. She says, Philip, it was you, wasn't it? It was, yeah.
Okay,
that's when I realised, you know, it came out to the front. And not just suicide thoughts, but I attempted twice, and the last time was more serious. You know?
And I know that was St. Patrick's Psychiatric Hospital in Euston Station that you attended, just to be clear, and they were very, 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 very good to you. Damien, stay with us, Philip. I'll come back to you in a sec. Just gather your breath. I promise I'll come back to you in a sec. Damien, you were a politician. You were a local councillor in Dublin for many years, independent councillor. What about the politics of all of this? Now, everyone is saying, oh, this is terrible, this is whatever, but what happens? Will it be like the Ryan report? People had to sign non-disclosure agreements, as you remember. They couldn't say how much they were awarded. It then emerged that solicitors were getting as much, if not more, than some of the victims.
Sorry, Joe, go ahead.
No, go ahead. It's your voice.
Yeah, it was one of the reasons I left politics. I was sort of disappointed. We were trying to, Brother Garvey, that he presided over the introduction of the legal strategy. Now, there was no suggestion that he abused anybody, but he presided over the introduction of a legal strategy that's heinous, that's really affecting survivors all over Ireland, you know, brothers. And we went to Drogheda to discuss the freedom of Drogheda with him, and the councillors up there wouldn't even speak to us. Only Mavior really would speak to us, Councillor Mavior, and they wouldn't. And that's one of the reasons I didn't stand for it. I was just fed up. And I decided I'd get into advocacy full-time with Sage Advocacy. But as I said,
did you not subsequently win that campaign?
We did, but yes. it was a year, and it was so hard.
Okay.
And the people who voted against us never have even spoken to us once, never acknowledged our emails, never nothing. It was so hard. And Michael Reid up there, only for him, he's in the same job as yourself, Michael Reid, the broadcaster, only for him it wouldn't have happened. And it just took, and so all these survivors all over the country, and it's a difficult word I have, survivors, and the word historical, some people, they're not surviving, they're victims, and they're not surviving. And it's enduring. Philip there is talking, and my heart goes out to Philip.
Yeah, you can hear his pain.
I can, and it's not historical. It's today, it's tomorrow. Philip will never meet the person he was supposed to be, you know, and that's something that people that need to think about. But I'm hoping, like as I said, this minister, we are, I think, turning a corner. And this is, there's been some talk in the papers and all that have been, it's a tribunal and all. This is a commission of investigation that they're talking about. So it should be quicker, you know, and I hope that other schools are brought into it. But doesn't mean we can't proceed and they will join us at a later stage, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, while that scoping inquiry is going on. But as I said, and the institutional survivors and all, they've been down the same road, and there's been mistakes made there, and we should have a wider conversation about what we mean by redress. What do we mean by redress? Like, some people have other complex needs, some health needs, educational needs, some financial, some don't have financial needs. And that's the time we've made mistakes before about eligibility. Now, people were excluded from many of the institutional redress schemes. And we need to make sure that that doesn't happen again. What's our learning? So I'd like to see that conversation. And I said, and that's why your very first question was about political. That's why I left politics. I just felt I could do more working for somebody like Sage Advocacy. And I'm delighted that they took me on and are giving me a chance to work with survivors of institutional abuse.
Yeah, but okay. I know you weren't in the Dáil. You're on the council. But I'm just thinking, if you're in the Dáil, you have parliamentary privilege, which very few people have, and it allows you to speak a lot more freely, as we're discovering, than others can at this stage. Okay, Damien, stay with us. John Murphy, stay with us. Philip, Joe at RT.ie 51551 is text number.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And Joe at RTE. Michael, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. Thanks for taking my call.
And thanks for making the call. You went to Fairy House, which we all know about from the Ryan report, and you subsequently went to redress. By the way, why, Mick, just why were you sent to Fairy House, this industrial school, residential?
Joe, they couldn't get me into school. My mother couldn't get me into school for nobody. And the reason why she couldn't get me into school is because the beatings you were getting in the school, you know, and we were, as I learned later in life, mm-hmm. I was born with a thing called borderline mentally handicapped. So you had a dunce hat on your desk all day. I had a brother sitting beside me who wrote with his left hand, and his hand was tied behind his back at the time. Yeah. But that's the school you were going to, and you wouldn't go into school for your mother. I mean, your mother would bring you to the front gate, and this really happened, Joe. And she walked me in and put me sitting down at the desk mm-hmm. in the school. That's how hard it was going for her. And she walked out the gate, and as she walked out the gate, I was across on the far side of the school after jumping out through the window and watching her coming out, and I walked up the road about a quarter of a mile behind her. So, I mean, they couldn't get me into school. And at the end then, on Garda Síochána, as you know yourself, Joe, we were taken into court. We were first taken into Marlborough House, if you remember that.
I do indeed, where the Met Office is now.
And there I was transferred up to Justice Kennedy in the juvenile courts.
Yeah.
And I was sent away for 7 years for missing school.
Good God.
And that's how it all started, Joe. And of course, Joe, nobody understands that when you first walk into one of these places, this is a deep memory. And when you walk out into a yard full of something like 200 boys, you lean up against the wall, and the fear and shock of what has hit you really hard. You then wish, you could go back to where you were. Because seeing your mother going back to the family circle you were in, you were completely outside it. And you didn't know that this was going to be your life.
Yeah.
Everything that you had loved and felt was going to be drained out of you in the next 6 or 7 years.
Yeah.
You know, and the shock of any comfort, any love, any feeling was completely gone out the window. You know, and that's where you started with it, Joe. And they talk about the hidings. I mean, I've seen beatings, I've seen sexual abuse, I've seen everything. I've seen a young fella being marched on a dormitory, not on a dormitory, in a refectory, which is our canteen we call them today.
Yeah.
He was marched from one end, Joe, to two lengths of a double-decker bus.
Yeah.
All the way up by the ear. And at the very top of that, there was a little sink there that was never used.
Right.
And you know, in the 1960s, sinks were the weak things. They were very strong.
Very hard.
And he hit his head off that, and the sink broke. We never seen that priest again because he was great for giving these massive hidings. So he was never seen again. Now, the boy, I'm sure he lived on, but he was never seen again. Now, he was opened up from across the field. Blood came splattering out everywhere. The next wall, in behind the wall where he was after being hit, the private staff that worked for the private kitchen to feed the Christian Brothers came rushing in, and they ushered him out. The last thing we seen was a towel with the blood being wiped off the floor, and that was that. All happened within a matter of a minute and a half, done and dusted. And within the light, there was another Christian Brother then took over the reference area, and we continued on with our day. You know, so that's the type, when we talk about beatings, that's the type of beatings that a lot of people are missing out on. Another young fella, I'm not going to get down the road of beatings all the time, Joe, because I know it's a very hard time for people to be listening to this again. But another young fella in particular, he complained about a sick stomach. He chased me all my life, actually, to what I've seen. He got a severe beating in the bed because somebody said he wasn't sick, which was unofficial, and the priest that was there said he was lying, and he beat him to a pulp. I never talked about a couple of slaps. Now, 2 days that young fella, 2 days after the young fella passed away, and I fought everything. Now, he died of meningitis to what we know in the end.
Okay.
But the little bit of he was so sick, I sneaked down to see him in that bed today when the Christian brother left.
Yeah.
And the poor devil was crying, the tears running out of his face. He was only 9 or 10. And all he kept repeating to me, I'm really, my stomach is really, really, really sore. And not a bleeding soul, listen to him. And he was left like that. He was transferred to the infirmary, which had two lovely beds. For when the doctor came in, mm-hmm. you had an infirmary, which we weren't in. We were in an ordinary dormitory. And you were brought up there with lovely lamps, two lovely beds in there. The doctor was brought in, you were very sick. You were brought into this special part of it, which had all the trimmings to look good. But this young fella was sent there after the beating, and he passed away then 2 days after that. And that was just some of the...
And why, Mick, looking back, well, why, as a country, were we so quick to send anyone that was any way different into these institutions? I go back to what I was saying earlier. This institution, they say they cater, these are their own words, we cater for 250 mildly mentally handicapped boys, many of whom are orphans. So that's why they ended up in that school, which now features in the, sorry, that institution, it was a residential institution, that now features so strongly in terms of numbers in the O'Toole scope inquiry. Mick,
there was two other young fellas came in there from an orphanage, as you say. They were after being reared up in the orphanage, and they were transferred into the industrial school because they had nowhere else to send them.
Yeah.
Now, these young fellas came in a little bit more pampered than what these ordinary young fellas had seen.
Okay.
And they'd never seen what they walked into. And I'll always remember, Joe, one of them particularly ended up working on the farm, or I was working myself. And he wasn't a physical working type of guy.
Yeah.
You know, he just wasn't able for what he was actually being thrown into. And the beatings he got on that milk parlour from a hose was unnatural. You know, it was unnatural what had happened to him inside in that place. And I these are the memories, Joe, you're left with. Then you have the sexual abuse. I mean, it lasts a lifetime. When this happens to you, mm-hmm. it doesn't leave you. You know, when you come out of these places, you're not going to say this to anybody. You're not going to talk about sexual abuse or anything.
Yeah, yeah.
You're going to try to live a normal life, which is not possible, but you think it is. And anything you come inside with, trying to rear up a family, it's not in you. The love and thoughts are not in you. They're all gone out of you. It's only when you get on later in life and you look back and you actually accept counselling. Somebody said to me once, will you take a bit of counselling when I was about 40? I said, for what?
Yeah.
I said, how is a counsellor going to understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Now, thank God, Joe, I eat my words. I met a wonderful man.
Brilliant.
A real gem of a man who really cared. And when I went, you know, over a six-month period, went into counselling with him, he ended up breaking down, trying to read me back what I was after telling him.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, that's how severe it was. The sexual abuse, it lasts a whole lifetime. It never, ever leaves you. And any time you've seen a rape case on television, even going into the High Court, yeah. you actually know how these people are feeling, because you're going through... When I went through with the readdress board,
yeah.
I was not ready for it. You know, I thought I was, but the belittling they made of me at the readdress board, the unrecognising of who I was, what I'd been through, was absolutely... I would hate to go through it again. I feel that the readdress board, when I went into them, I felt I went through the abuse much harder than what I did when I was a young man. That's the way I walked out of the place. I had a nervous breakdown.
Yeah.
I'm still getting counselling to this very day. I still attend a mental health service, and I'm still on medication because of it. It just never, ever goes away. You don't learn how to live with it, Joe.
Yeah.
You learn how to survive it.
Now, the redress board, as you know, were made up of good professional people. It wasn't their intention, but
I know that, Joe.
Okay,
oh, God, I know
that's
that.
Good.
I mean,
but,
I hear
you saying that, but just I'm walking on eggshells these days with these lawyers everywhere.
No, I understand that. They were there
that's
to
fine,
do a
that's
job,
fine.
And that's all they could do.
But why would you... Was it because, one, you had to sign a non-disclosure agreement, you couldn't talk about how much you got, you couldn't talk about what you said in the redress board and the way it was set up, that was anonymous, you were It was in private, obviously. What was it about your redress sport that has upset you so much, Mick?
It's just, look, I was on to 1-4 before I went into the readdress board. I went into the first address board, Joe. I went to the readdress board later on. There was a first board set up, I can't think of the name of them. And I went to the readdress board in the end.
Mm-hmm.
I just felt, Joe, there was no recognition. You weren't allowed to talk. Your solicitor's top spoke for you. You had a solicitor and you had a barrister. You had three opponents that you wanted to face about the abuse they put you through.
Mm-hmm.
So they had the three opponents facing you. Each one of them had a solicitor and a barrister. So that was nine people and two or three more people. So you had 12 to 14 people mm-hmm. staring you down as they made you feel like you were in the wrong.
Yeah.
You have no right to be here. How dare you? Now, I can't say what I got, but mm-hmm. I did get a six-figure disclose, which was one of the highest payments I got. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't about the payment, Joe. It wasn't. It was about trying to stand up. And to this very day, even in your gut, you know, when you talk about this stuff, like I'm talking now, which wasn't easy, I can promise you that, it still hurts you in the gut. There's not a night goes past, Joe, that I can't sleep without some sort of assistance. I used to depend on a few pints. Now I depend on a sleeping tablet to help me sleep.
Yeah.
I know at my age I should have got over it an awful lot, but you could never get over it. At night time I've often woke up there in the bed and pulled the blanket down over my face and look to see, am I going to be pulled out of bed today? I had a problem that I was born with, was a lot of people where you rock yourself in the bed.
Yeah.
I don't know how many times in the middle of the night there was two or three of us done it and we were pulled out of bed and beaten or pulled for rocking. Now, it wasn't a comfort rocking. I looked into it later on in life.
Mm-hmm.
It was a rocking you were born with.
Yeah.
It was borderline and some other thing I can't think of it now at the moment. But it was definitely part of you. Some part of your body always had to be moving.
Yeah, but there's nothing wrong with that. What's...
No, I know there was, but you were made feel, Joe.
I know.
You were made feel that it was the biggest... I mean, look at me brother, Joe, when I went to school. He tied his hand behind his back because he was left-handed. You know,
and Mick,
he was made feel.
Mick, you were sent to Fairyhouse for 7 years.
Yeah.
Did your parents ever try and get you back, ever contact the place, ever?
Jesus, Joe. You know, when you're in these places, you know, this stuff does never cross your head. You mean, you eventually mm-hmm. put your head down and you learn, Joe. You actually learn how to try to avoid most things in the industrial school. And you never think of your parents. I mean, every one of your letters was read. Every one of your letters you received was read. Every one of your letters you sent away was dictated to you, and you wrote. You never wrote anything bad about the school. You weren't allowed to write anything bad about the school. I had a sister of mine out of the blue came down to see me. I was called off the farm. I was working on the farm. I was on education of a job. I was working on a big farm that they had, and I was dragged down off the farm, made clean, good soup on me, and then walked into my sister and said, "Nothing. If you're asked in here, you were in school." You know, when she saw me, I was in school. Sorry about the delay, he said. We had to go and get him. But it was after being cleaned, dried, and new soup for me. And my mother wrote to the Minister of Education. I think I've read 12 letters, and it brings tears to your eyes, Joe, because you can see, you know, the hardship she was going through. She tried to get me transferred up to St. Michael's. In Inchicore there, St. John of God's, up in Island Bridge, I think that's the name of it.
Yeah, St. John of God.
She got me a placement, and they accepted me, and the Minister of Education agreed with her,
mm-hmm.
and the industrial school said no, that they'd be able to deal with these mental problems here in the industrial school.
But you know mental problems.
I had no mental problems.
If you had, they were inflicted on you by these animals.
That's exactly, Joe. They were saying I had a mental problem. I was borderline mentally capable, which means, Joe, you were suffering with something like dyslexia or something like that. It was something minute you were dealing with that could have been worked with. But these animals, now, you know, Joe, they were getting £8 a day per child
to keep you.
In 1966. That's a lot of money when you look back on it. I think my own father was on £2 or £3 a week at the time. So, I mean, it was a money thing to them too. People would say, what about food? They had 4 or 5 staff running after them, serving them in a massive big hall.
Of course, yeah.
Something like you see in a film, all the Delftware, silverware was all on the table. We had our own hod, as we thought. We walked up and got our porridge, our stew if we were lucky, and our tea in the evening, which would have been toast, or no, it wouldn't be toast, bread and jam. And you were sent to bed, you were all just starving. They had a hen house that had 2,500 hens in it, and I never to this day can remember eating a boiled egg in the school, or ever seeing one. They sold them. We picked all the apples down there for a big factory that was down beside us.
Clonmel, yeah.
We done spuds all summer long. They had thousands of acres of land down there. They grew their own vegetables. Everything was done. We darned our own socks. We made our own socks. Fixed our own clothes. We had tailoring. We had the cobblers on the site that learned you how to fix shoes. And while you were in there, you polished the boots of other boys every week. You were constantly slaved. You picked peeled spuds every morning for the 200 boys that was in the school. And they were all peeled by a knife inside in a little round room with a bucket in the middle of the floor. Every time you filled the bucket, you brought it into the chef and he threw it into whatever was going. So it was constant work.
Mick, stay with us. Mick, don't be... You're too hard on yourself. You said to me earlier, I don't know the figure, but I have a bit of an idea of the figure, that you got a six-figure sum, which to some people... Some people sounds like millions. What you got is not by any. What you got, as far as I'm guessing, and don't say A or nay, but I know some of the figures.
No, I won't.
I don't know your figure. But I suspect, Mickey, you're following this nonsense about this bicycle shed or bicycle cover in the Dáil for 350,000. And nobody, I can guarantee that what you got, if a bicycle shed in Dáil Éireann costs, bicycle cover, it's not even a shed, if a bicycle cover in Dáil Éireann costs 350 for, 16 bikes, I reckon the amount you got for the suffering you went through from the same state that paid 350 for a bicycle shed, and I know all the pub talk about it and all that carry on, but that's neither here nor there. I reckon what you got wouldn't even build a bicycle shed at the Dáil rates for 3 bicycles. But anyway, stay with us, Mick, and we'll talk to you after the break.
100%
sure of that, Joe. After this break. Joe at rt.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And I know Philip, John and Damien and Mick are all listening to each other. Philip, before I go back to Mick, you have a number of other points you want to make. Philip.
Yeah, the last victims there talking about, you know, the violence.
Mick, yeah.
And I don't know if it was the abuse or my bipolar disorder, but I was very, very sensitive. And I remember, like, in them days in the National School of Christian Brothers and the one second school, you were lettered for the most stupid things. I was lettered for dropping a pencil on the floor.
For dropping a pencil?
Both hands, they took out the letter.
Oh.
Pushed on a break one time. We went to the yard and I heard this child screaming.
Yeah.
And I looked in the window and he was being lettered and lettered and lettered, and the person doing to him was in a frenzy. That child was screaming. And I just got totally traumatised. You know, all the kids were down playing football.
Yeah.
And we saw this. Hopefully, I signed up at 9, 8, 9, 10. And that was my first experience. And, you know, I've been traumatised by injustice and violence. Children, you know.
Yeah.
And of course, it got worse.
Well, I know you were hospitalised. Subsequently, in 1994, you were, as you told me earlier, in and out of St. Pat's because of the abuse that you suffered, the sexual and physical abuse that you suffered at the hands of Christian brothers. Stay with us, Philip. John, you're listening to Mick as well as Damien.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that struck me was that that trauma when you're sent to an institution. Now, I know you were in the school, by choice. But that fear that Mick spoke about when he was sent.
When you listen to the other gentleman, what I suffer seems to be fail into insignificance. No, like, I cannot believe it, you know. And I feel so sorry when I hear those stories. But the thing, Joe, is we grew up with that. Yeah. I grew up in Dublin near De La Salle School that my friends went to. And they always talked about getting beaten up and stuff like this. You know, it was going on all the time.
And did you went to Rockwell, so your parents had to pay?
Oh, I went to Rockwell only for a short time. I was in Mary's, and I was sent to Rockwell.
Mary's, which is another Audi Gold school, yeah.
And that was just an open prison of violence and bullying. And I persuaded my parents, like, to get me out of there after 6 months or something like that. Otherwise, I was going to run away from the place. They even had things, Joe, like they had a custom where at Christmas, when you'd had your Christmas dinner before you went home on holidays, the 6th years were able to beat up the 5th years. And we all came out of the reformatory, straight out the door, and I was nearly knocked unconscious outside the 6 years dormitory. So that was the type of thing that was going on. It was, you know, there wasn't a sign of a priest or anything. It was some sort of tradition, you know. But that's nothing compared to what those other gentlemen went through. Nothing, you know.
And you were abused by Maloney and Carraher. Yeah.
I wasn't abused by Carraher.
But he was. Yeah, he was an abuser, okay.
Yeah, but the funny thing was Carraher was teaching me sex education while he was abusing other boys. He was teaching our class sex education.
And was he... I know,
he failed to mention that it was a cardinal sin to be touching boys, you know.
But I bet you he did mention that if you're in a loving relationship and had sex outside of marriage, that was a sin.
Oh, that was it. What did we call it, Joe? A mortaler, was it? Mm. A mortaler.
And can you, John? Can you go back to being that 12-year-old? And what Mick alluded to it as well. What stopped you? What stopped you reporting it? Was it you didn't want to upset your parents, or?
Joe, like, that's a question I ask myself the whole time. But my rationale, you were brought up in Catholic Ireland, a different type of Ireland than it is today. And, like, you couldn't talk to your parents about something like that. Yeah. Like, these were the people who were telling my parents how to live their life, you know? And some of them were friends of, two of the priests in Mary's were friends of my father, because he had been in Rockwell, you know?
Yeah.
And it was just oppressive the whole time. It was just oppressive.
And what's your reaction to this report? It's called a scoping inquiry, but it's nearly 800 pages. It's four volumes and a volume of appendices.
Well, I was one of the people who contributed to it. I just think it's fantastic. Okay. I haven't even finished reading it, but
yeah, no, I don't think anyone has.
I'll say, Joe, that you know, when I talk freely to people about it, if they want to know, but I've always kind of said to them, well, on a scale of 1 to 10, I was kind of 3, but my God, after reading what other people and hearing what other people have gone through, I might even put myself at kind of a 0.5. You know, like it was so bad. It was so bad what other people have suffered from. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Another Michael there. I'll come back to you, Mick, in a sec. Michael, you're listening to Mick.
Hi, Joe. Yeah, I'm listening to Mick, and I'm just, I'm in awe of the man. I really am. He's a remarkable man. How he is the way he is now. The idea that there was anything mentally wrong with him is just ridiculous. He's incredibly intelligent, incredibly articulate, as far as I'm concerned. And I just feel very moved by what he's been through. I'm incredibly sorry that he had to go through it, you know, that I'm part of the society and was part of the church that had so much to do with the abuse that he suffered.
And the incident, well, you're not responsible in that sense, Michael. But
no, I don't take personal responsibility. I mean that our society. I'm in my late 50s. Our society, our church, enabled this. I mean, I was thinking, listen to Mick, what Christopher Hitchens said, and it's pretty heavy. But he said the Catholic Church is the largest, best organized paedophile ring in the world.
Yeah, but that's untrue as well. We know that.
Well, look, what I'm saying is
Michael, I do totally understand. I'm not going to check anyone. I can guarantee people on the level of hurt and empathy that you feel for Mick and indeed other people. And Mick, by the way, Mick is in his 60s. And as I go back to what Damien O'Farrell said at the start, this whole thing, you know, this is all historical. It's not historical, it's real.
Yeah,
it's live, exactly. It's today.
Yeah.
And it's made even worse. It's made even worse for me when I go back to the Ryan report, which I did last night, to look up what the Ryan report said about institutions that are mentioned in the O'Toole report. And the Ryan report, the Ryan Commission were duped as well by the same organisations. And then subsequently, and I come back to this whole area, which I hope other people, better journalists than I, can look into, the way these institutions were intellectually labelled challenged. Go back to that letter I read out. They described themselves as, we house mildly mentally handicapped boys, many of whom were orphans. And the number of allegations against that place is shocking. But this was known. This was known. Yeah. We're going back 15 years to the Ryan report. But nobody stood up. Okay, there were fantastic speeches in the Dáil, the swish of the soutane and all that carry on. But nobody said, hang on a minute. What these religious congregations, what is to happen to them in this country? What level of recognition are they to be given in this country? Are they to be given charitable status? Are they allowed disincorporate or incorporate or go down any legal alley they want to avoid, as in Damien O'Farrell's case, to avoid being sued? The state had a role there and the state didn't do it. Now, we're hearing the speeches again, and I think the most important speech came from the Garda Commissioner this morning, Drew Harris, where he encouraged people to come forward. And he didn't say, of course, there are some people before the courts, and as I mentioned earlier, and the courts will deal with that. That's their job. And everyone is innocent until proven otherwise. It's innocent until, that's our courts. We live in a democracy.
Yeah,
but as Drew Harris implied, that does not mean that we cannot talk about those institutions and say to people, is there anyone else out there who was abused, come forward and you will be treated properly and in confidence. And that's what Drew Harris said this morning. I'd stay with us, Michael, and John, and Damien, and Patricia is coming on next, and Mick is still there. Joe at rt.ie, 51551 is our text number.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Patricia Donoghue, good afternoon. I know you're in the Midlands. You witnessed violence from a nun, Patricia. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. I did indeed. I would have worked in, it was a place, we say, for severely, mildly and moderately, mentally, this is what it was called, handicapped children back in the 60s.
Yeah.
And I would have been 16 then. I worked there till I was 18, and then I went nursing to England. But I hear everyone's story. I've worked as a therapist for the last 30 years. Okay. The horrors, the hell, everything. But the witness of such horrific abuse affected me so, so much in my life, because I could do nothing about it. And it was years later when I was working in England and I could get the smell of a particular medication.
Yeah.
And I realised what was happening. Now, this girl, she was about 14, and she was probably pre-menstrual, used to run away across the field, and of course wearing uniforms, long hats to work. And we always one of us sent to bring her back. We brought her back across the field, across the ditches. And this particular nun would bring her into a side room. And she'd have her in the side room, and this horrific, I always associated it with the smell of death. This smell would come out of the side room. Well, she'd get a wooden spoon, and she'd beat her, and beat her. Well, Joe, the screams and the roars of that girl, you could not believe it in your wildest dreams, the screams. And then, about 3 days later, that young girl would come out of that room. I will never forget it. And that's the trauma of the person that's witnessing that and can do absolutely nothing about it because of fear. Yeah. Who do you report it to?
Yeah.
Who do you object to? And every month, for as long as I was there, and I was working in the same where it was severely called mentally handicapped and moderate, but this young girl, she came over from the mildly mentally handicapped, and she worked in the kitchen, you know, helping put out the dinners and that. But every month, same thing, and this beating. And when I went to England, it used to haunt me. The screams, the screams, the screams. And she'd come out of that room, this nun, with her full uniform on her and her wooden spoon, and there would be silence. Silence. And we would not see that girl for about, it could be 2 days, it could be 3 days, we see her again in the kitchen. And this is what I've talked to hundreds of people about in my life, but I've never spoke publicly about it. Okay. But listening to your show, Joe, and honest to God, you've opened a can of worms, but thank God for it, because it is hell to live with what you can't do. It's hell, because you can't do anything about it.
Yeah.
And you feel responsible at 16 years of age. But those screams haunt me.
And those screams are echoing, what, for five decades at this rate?
I'm 76 now.
Yeah.
And I was 16 then.
Oh, my God.
So that's 60 years. I still hear that girl screaming. And the guilt then, and again, I spent most of my life nursing and as a therapist, but it's the hopelessness of not being able to do anything about it. You know, or the child that witnesses, and, you know, I've worked with cases of abuse and sexual abuse and all of that. But it's the child that witnesses that experiences this guilt. Why didn't I do something? It's fear. It's fear, Joe. Why didn't I speak out before this? And I said to a lady about 3 weeks ago, I am going to find that nun, because she couldn't be that much older than me. I am going to find her. And I said this about 3 weeks ago, before this broke. I'm going to find her. And I'm going to confront her, if she's still alive. I am going to confront her. And now, do you know what this has done? It's given me the courage to do it.
And what would you say to her?
I'd say to her, do you have any guilt, any shame, any remorse about how to take out your anger, your rage, whatever, on an innocent child? Because that girl was only about 14. I was only 16. And whatever her pent-up rage or anger was, it was you wouldn't see it in a horror film. You wouldn't hear it. And the room that girl used to go in, was brought into, was a side room off a corridor that went down towards one of the wards. And it was about two doors down from a kind of a kitchen area that was in the middle of the block. Right. And if you were there, there was nowhere to go, and there was nothing you could do. Not a thing. And the worst part of it, Joe, I could have been the one that brought her back across the fields.
Yeah.
And I remember her, she running away one particular day, and there was land drainage up in that area. And she jumped across this trench. She would have been a good bit taller than me. She jumped across the trench. I jumped the trench in the full uniform. How I wasn't drowned, I don't know. But I still had to go, bring her back the whole way around for this beating. It's unbelievable, Joe. And listening to everyone that's on, it's so horrific. But, you know,
And what
you will be rewarded, Joe, for bringing this up.
It's people like you that are bringing it up, Patricia. That smell that you smoke, you spoke of, the smell of death. What was it? Disinfectant or Dettol or Jay's fluid or?
It's pyraldehyde.
What's that?
Pyraldehyde is a sedative that relaxes the muscles.
Oh my God.
It sometimes is used with severe cases of epilepsy. It was used as a sedative when I was training, when I was doing my psychiatric training at first in England. It was used as a sedative. But the smell, it's if you've ever got the smell of death, it smells exactly like the smell of death. You can smell it and you'll never forget the smell. As soon as I started nursing in England, and one day I got this smell, I thought, what the heck is that? And I thought, my God, that's why she didn't come out of the room for 3 days. She was sedated. That's what she... This, and I don't care, Joe. I don't care who hears me saying this. I honestly don't care, because I've told this story to so many people. And as I said, to this day, I can still smell pyraldehyde. And that's and this. But now, in fairness, Joe, that we were only 16 years of age, and we were administering high levels of medication, and we hadn't a clue what they were. We hadn't a clue, not a clue. You know, there was barbiturate sodium, there was sleeping tablets, everything, and we gave them to the patients in their dessert, which we hadn't a clue what they were.
Oh my God!
Spoonful of this and a spoonful of that, and. This one wasn't sick, and most of the severely mentally handicapped children, most of them were in bed. And they were got out of bed at 4 o'clock in the morning, because we hadn't staff enough to get them out when we were in night duty. Put out, dressed at 4 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
And this was all run by, there was all nuns in it, and there was all girls in it at the time. There was no boys in it, and it was all run by nuns. And there was a few lay people in the kitchen, of course, a few people like us who were supposed to be nurses, if you could call us that, at the time.
Children. But again, it was, you were children.
We were children. And what we were witnessing was an abusive situation, and we were being emotionally and mentally abused by witnessing it as well. Because there was nothing we could do about it. And it was fear. It was fear that controlled us. Fear. What could happen to us? Or would we be sacked? Or, you know, what could happen to us if we said anything? But it was the one particular girl that this nun... It was one particular... I will never, to the day I die, forget the dreams. Ever.
I can hear that. Stay with Patricia. Damien O'Farrell... Damien, how are you hearing? I know you were a victim and then your campaigner and then a politician and then became disillusioned with politics in the conduit of your campaign. But Damien, how are you hearing Mick and Patricia and Michael and John? What's your reaction
Mick, just the hopelessness that Patricia talks about, you know, you get that. Mick, then, I hear minimisation all the time. That's something that people hear in therapy all the time, abuse survivors. We're always minimising things. It was worse for somebody else, or we minimise, and that's something that just shows that the trauma. Mick described, Mick is one of the most articulate people that you've had on your radio station in your career. He was excellent getting across the message. I'd say the trauma when he went through redress, a lot of these young people that were put into the institutions through the courts, and that was traumatic. So when they went to redress then, it was like a court situation and it was trauma triggering. I can imagine that's what, but we need to learn from those experiences and going forward. But on a positive note, as I said, I think this minister is doing good work, Norma Foley. You have to give credit where credit's due. At the moment, she's bringing through a suite of supports for people that have been in industrial schools and all. And where I work now, Sage Advocacy, we've been appointed by her. Just really signpost the supports, so education and health. Would it be possible to read out? I want something positive to come from the programme. Would it be possible to read out the number that people... So Sage Advocacy, it's 536-7330. That's 536-7330. And that's any survivors of institutions that's industrial.
That's 01, obviously, yeah. Yeah,
Magdalene Laundries, you know, and to contact that number, and they will be supported, and they'd be signposted to supports that are there.
Yeah,
and they're right. These are rights that they have. Now, this isn't charity. These are their rights, and we want them to get their rights.
And for people who have access to the internet, which I know is not everyone, and we shouldn't assume it is, the RTE, if you go to rte.ie/helplines. Mick, how are you doing there? You're still with me?
I'm listening there, Joe. And you know something? That guy who's just been on the...
Damien,
on the phone to you there. What a wonderful way he started coming across. And he is 100% right. You do minimise when you're speaking to somebody else about it. You can't put your heart into it because you nearly start breaking down yourself if you did. The guy who came on and apologised, he really hit me. You know, that's the first time I've ever heard an apology whatsoever, ever, of what I've seen. And, you know, we go back to the abuse just for a moment, Joe.
Yeah.
Go back to the guy that got, whose head was split open in the sink in the dormitory, or in the refectory. Personally, me, I was up one day combing my hair after having whatever it was, a wash or something. And I was dragged down two flights of stairs by the same guy. Two flights of stairs, no hands hitting, by the back of the head, dragged across the yard. The whole school stopped when they said the man, he was red in the face, got me into the office and met me around the office for admiring myself in the mirror. That's what he was doing, he said. You know, the guy who passed away, I seen his parents in the church, and to this day, Joe, they still haunt me. His mother and father were so humble, so broken looking, so poor looking, to a young boy that was then standing there looking at them at 10. Now I look at them for a second, and the man who did it to him tipped me on the shoulder and told me to look forward. He was out of standing behind me because he knew what I'd seen, and I'm sure he was afraid I might say something.
Wow.
But, you know, that's how it was, Joe. Your life was in your hands no matter what. As I said, we never seen a boiled egg, but yet they were producing 2,500 eggs per day. You know, they had their own staff for feeding them, and they had the muck that was given down then to the boys. You know, they never seen any proper food whatsoever. Now, it did change, though. A Minister of Education, a new Minister of Education came in. I'm thinking about 1966, 67, Joe.
But, Mick, were you there for 7 years?
I was there, Joe, from 1965 to 1970.
And how did you get out?
This is a good one now for you, Joe. I went to get the bus back down after holidays. Now, don't forget, I had my little suitcase with me, like Mr. Bean has.
Okay.
The same type of suitcase I had in my hand. My mother was out there putting me bits of shorts in there. And I went up to get the bus at Newlands Cross. And the bus drove down as far as Racoole. And while the bus was on the route from there to Racoole, the Christian brother came down to me. What are you doing on the bus? I said, come on. Oh, no, you're released. And he stopped the bus at Racoole and threw me off.
That was it.
And that was my release. I can't tell you what it was like watching this bus pulling away and me hands with a suitcase standing on the side of the road in Racoole Cross. And Jesus, I said, what has just happened to me? And you were out and you didn't know what hit you when you got out. You understand what I'm saying? It was just your mind was settled for going back to the school.
Yeah, I know. You're totally unprepared.
Think of a finger you were thrown out on the side of the road.
Well, first of all, pardon the. I'm not trying to be. First of all, when you were first sent there, you were thrown under the bus, and then they threw you off the bus.
Five years later,
of hell. Stay there, Mick. I need to take a break. John and James are after this break. Stay there. 51551.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
This whole process of abusers being, instead of ringing the Gardaí, which should have been done, by the officials or the hierarchy, so to speak, within the institution, they moved him. Henry Maloney was moved. Arthur Carraher, I think, ended up in Canada, where there was no extradition treaty. They were two Holy Ghost fathers. John, you came across these two as well, John, in Glenageary in Dublin.
That's correct, yeah. I was
I'm a former student of one of the schools where both those priests are taught. And I can recall absolutely, with absolute clarity, about 1973, I believe, where Father Maloney was reported by one of the parents to the president of the college, Father Hurley. And the person, the parent who reported, was a very well-known person in Dublin at the time. And Maloney disappeared from that school overnight. And he went on to, and the priest, I believe the priest knew the allegation by the parent, because the parent went to meet the president of the college, Father Hurley. And that priest, Father Maloney, moved to other schools in Sierra Leone. There was a Holy Ghost Father there, which was one of the, apparently one of the better schools in Sierra Leone, which taught all the elite from the Sierra Leone kind of big families. He then was moved afterwards to Rockwell College. And it is no doubt in my mind that the institution of the Holy Ghost Fathers knew exactly what they were doing, which was to take a person who was alleged to have done certain things, abuse of students, including sexual abuse, and they moved them to other places to try and hide the problem. It was absolutely part of their policy of the order at the time.
Understood.
And that man,
yes,
that priest, Father Maloney, he was eventually removed from the priesthood, I believe, after, some years afterwards. But he committed many crimes, and in fact, he was, I believe, he was found, he was convicted on two or three occasions, and served time in prison for his wrongdoings. But the church, what I find absolutely unacceptable, is the institution of the order were moving people around in the full knowledge of what the person was doing, only to have the same crimes committed on other students in other locations over decades. That happened.
Now, we were told, in terms of what should happen now, John, we were told 2 years ago the religious order aren't involved in the schools anymore, and it's run by primarily, not totally by lay people. But I'm looking at the apology that was issued, there's no days on it, but the apology issued by BlackRock and Willow Park Schools by the principal, who's Yvonne Markey. And she says, we are appalled. But then she says, Father Martin Kelly, he's a Holy Ghost Father, our provincial. Like, it was, I thought they had stepped back from all the schools, yet they're quoted, Father Martin Kelly, I'm sure he's a very decent man, our provincial. So in other words, these orders are still running the schools. This principal of BlackRock is saying that Martin Kelly is my boss.
Well, whether they are or aren't, I can't be absolutely sure exactly. But what clearly exists still is the order of the Holy Ghost Fathers, now called the Spiritans. That order still exists in Ireland, and they have a duty. That order has a duty of care to its students, which it did not exercise. And they should be held accountable. Whether they're involved in the schools or not now, I can't comment on that. But what I've stated here to you today happened. Yeah. I saw it.
Okay.
And the wrongdoings of Father Maloney are well documented in criminal proceedings. This is not hearsay. He was convicted on two or three occasions, to my knowledge, certainly twice.
And he admitted it, John. He admitted it. But anyway, on we go. Apologies to the other guys. Sincere apologies to the other callers. We didn't get to. We will hopefully get to you tomorrow. Jim O'Donoghue Martin is a researcher, a producer, Richard Stern. Ray Darcy is next. Go to Mahogood.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Their new autumn range will leave you bursting with ideas. View in store or at harrycurry.com.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815 or send your WhatsApp voice notes to 087 484 8888.